You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
William Blake said that a fool who persists in his folly will become wise. A fool who persists in his folly will become wise. And I always thought this was such an amazing way of looking at meditation, that we perceive somehow that by sitting still we'll get closer to God, or we'll get closer to uncovering spirit, or we will get further away from sin, or we will get, I mean, there are all manner of ways of looking at this. But that meditation itself will somehow get us there, get us closer. And the irony is that meditation is actually designed to fail. It's designed to show you that you cannot get any closer to spirit than you already are. So we persist in our folly, and in that persistence, we actually begin to recognize, oh, it was all already there. It's been there the whole time. There's nothing to attain. Just like you cannot attain your face. You cannot attain your feet. They're there. You can recognize, oh goodness, there they are. But you cannot attain them. You cannot attain your calling card to the world, your face. You cannot attain that. It is already there. You can recognize it. You can especially recognize it if you try to attain it. If you try to attain your face or your feet, you just engage in this great doing, this great, oh, I've got to attain somehow something that is already, that you'll recognize it is totally impossible. So while meditation has these amazing gifts to bestow upon us and others if we practice it, meditation does not get us any closer to anything that hasn't always already been there in its full, radiant series of expressions in every single moment of our life. It's always been there. So it shows us then, in other words, that spirit is not out there. Spirit is not any more out there than it is in here. And this is kind of a radical repositioning or recontextualization of what it means to be a seeker. Because if being a seeker means that you are looking for something out there, the presumption is that there has been already a loss of something. I'll say that again. I want to make sure this is really, really clear. We perceive that there's a loss of something and we want to regain it. But it's never been missing. It's been veiled, but it's never been missing. And what creates these veils, you know, what keeps everything kind of hidden with mist, fog, curtains, brick walls, depending, you know, on what the what your particular method is, what creates those is resistance. Resistance to what is. So if we can recognize that we try to apprehend spirit and we can't, we recognize that we can't because actually spirit is us. And as we recognize that spirit is us, that we are, in other words, a divine manifestation of spirit, that we are spiritual beings having this wildly human experience rather than human beings having a spiritual experience. If we can recognize that, then what happens is we start to undo. We start to do, as opposed to doing, which is our typical mode. Gotta do, gotta do, gotta do, gotta do. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. Whatever it is. Instead of that, there becomes a relaxation, and in the relaxation there's expansion. In that expansion, we are usually teased into that place through meditative states. We'll find that we, you know, arrive at these deeply euphoric or blissful openings. And we will oftentimes mistake that for spirit. Okay? It's a state. Now the state is an expression of spirit, but it isn't spirit. It's not something you can attain. Yet the ego will have a search for it again. Oh, I want to get that again. I want to have that experience again. I'm resisting what I'm experiencing now in this, in today's meditation. I'm resisting this, and I'm really wanting to go after what I had yesterday, because that really felt cool. It's a really common thing to have happen, but it doesn't really take us into awakening. The experience of states, however, brought on by meditation, if we can just meet them without trying to do anything to them, without trying to adjust them, without trying to modify them, without trying to quantify, qualify, or understand them, then what happens is these states begin to settle and permeate through us and become aspects of our being. So a bliss state, or a state of radical unfolding into a deep quietude, that deep quietude can very often, as a state, become a trait or become an aspect of who we are. We just meet it, and we don't try to mess with it. And there's no futzing with spirit. There is just an opening to it. So that's really our practice. Our work then is to actually try to allow for these states to manifest themselves into aspects of who we are. Aspects of who we always have been. One of the things that's problematic with states in meditation is that they're always born in time. They're always born in time. In other words, they always happen. They have a beginning, they have a middle, and an end. Even if we don't know what they are time-bound, okay? But what's very interesting is if we meet these states brought on by stillness in meditation, if we can meet the state, the meeting itself takes us outside of the stream of time. Witnessing our experience fully, with our full attention, takes us outside the stream of time. We can watch the stream of time. We can witness the stream of time. If we are witnessing the stream of time, we're not bound by it. We're actually witnessing it. We're literally kind of falling into our infinite being, our infinite nature, our original face. And rather than attaining the original face, we are open to it. And its arrival is expressed through every single thing that we do, as long as our intention, as long as our activity, as long as everything that we do comes from that place of undoing. This may sound like a koan, this may sound kind of strange, but if everything that we do comes from undoing, the things that we engage in, the things that we do, are imbued with a divinity that can change the world. Witnessing our experience fully is awakening. So when we, in the very beginning of a meeting tonight, when I talked about, can you witness anything that's resisting anything in your body? Can you witness just the experience of sitting? Can you witness the experience of hearing this voice? Can you witness your thoughts? If you can witness all of those things, you are none of them. that which can witness all of those things that I just described is none of them. What is that? Well, that's what meditation is. We give ourselves over to the witness, which is not a self. The witness can witness the self. The witness can witness things. It can witness time. It can witness all things. And nothing is outside of it. Nothing is outside of the witness. Does it move? No. It is undoing. It is the undoing. It's not doing anything. It's just present. It is awake. It is fully there. It is awareness. It doesn't move. Now we can hang up curtains or erect walls or bring in the fog to keep that from being recognized. We can do that. The ego's job, as a matter of fact, to do that. But we can also get beyond all those things. We can begin to inhabit this spaciousness as this spaciousness begins to inhabit us consciously. And we do this the minute we just literally decide to not identify with all the aspects of contraction, all the things, all the feelings, all the thoughts. And we don't get caught by them. Instead, we watch them. We are free of them. And being free of those things, being free of the identification with mind, allows us then to be freedom. It allows us to orient ourselves with a liberation that goes beyond any concept, any story, any pattern, any habit, any bit of our own personal inertia. And it catapults us into an impersonal space. Spaciousness, glory, love, that we can't squish into anything that has a name. We can talk around it, can't squish it. Just like a wave is an aspect of the ocean, okay? That the wave is an aspect of the ocean. We can identify with the wave. We can think as a wave that we are all that there is. But then there comes a shift in our context through meditation. We recognize, oh my goodness, there's so much more ocean that I never even knew about. And the wave starts to recognize that it's part of a greater whole. Very typically, there is a tendency. So we can look at it almost like the sleeping aspect or the deluded aspect of who we are is a wave. Then the seeking aspect becomes something akin to the ocean itself. We tend to look at the, you know, oceanic nature of all things. And, oh, where everything's interconnected and everything. I'm no longer just a wave that is temporary. I'm this whole ocean that always is generating more and more waves, and I just have to rest there. That's true. However, there's another step. There is the sleep that we identify with the wave. There is the seeking or the awakening that is moving towards this oceanic oneness. And then there is the awakened, which recognizes that it's not just a wave. And it's not just the entirety of the ocean, it is everything. And those things, all at once. And this is ungraspable. I mean, I can use these words to point to what the mystics have been talking to for, you know, thousands of years. But this is not something we can understand, because something that we understand is confined, just like a wave is confined or separate from, yet connected to, something that is infinitely more vast. I've also described it before as our context becomes shaken as we still ourselves, as we become more and more still through meditative practice. We no longer are caught by the turbulence on the surface of the ocean. The waves, which normally kick us around, as we start stilling ourselves, we essentially deepen our experience. And it doesn't take long to go enough below the surface to not be thrown around by whatever is going on the surface. The deeper we go, the more still, the more quiet. Okay? But it's still totally connected with everything. It's just deeper. That's awakening. Being awakened is when identification is no longer just with the stillness. It's actually with the aspect that is at every point in that journey down deep. And that is that the water is wet. You will find wetness at every single level of depth, whether you are on top, whether you are vapor, whether you are a wave, or whether you are at the bottom of the ocean, it's always wet. And so what our meditation does, what the undoing does, what the witness allows for us to do, is be totally and equally present at every single aspect, every single juncture, every single point of reference in our lives. We're there fully. We recognize that all things arise within witness. Everything in our experience arises within witness. Everything arises equally within the spaciousness of undoing as opposed to doing, as opposed to grasping or averting. Everything arises equally when the awareness is there. And in that space, in that oneness, in that wetness, there is no subject and object. It's just what it is. And we don't resist that. We need it. We just need that with our full attention. And what our full attention does is it clues us into essentially this one that I'm talking about, this deep unity, this universe, this one song. And as we start to plug into that, we recognize that instead of a great search, we recognize that there's nothing that we need to search for, that it's all right here. Every single thing that we need to awaken is right here, right now. And it will only ever happen in this now. Awakening will never happen in the future. It will only happen in the now. It will happen as we recognize our resistance, as we recognize our greed, as we recognize our state, as we recognize and continually recognize with the fullness and courageousness that is given to us the minute we start to fearlessly face stillness. Fearlessness comes with practicing stillness. Because we realize from that great undoing, when the search no longer governs every single thing that we do, when we just relax and stillness informs our activity, we realize that we are already spirit. We are already whole. We are already a divine expression of the infinite at all times. All we need to do is become conscious of it and practice that consciousness. and having Bruce, we help all beings.
And meditation is the key. So, if you don't,
wasting time. If there is no stillness consciously brought into your life in your day to day, you're then governed by that which is not real. So, if we don't bring the undoing into the doing, if we don't bring witness in, there is no awakening. There is no enlightenment. There is nothing other than delusion. We become more deeply and deeply and deeply contracted. Just like if you're in your, if you're sitting in your chair in your cubicle, and you start spinning, and you're open, the spin doesn't go very fast, right? There's an opening, but the minute you start bringing your body in, that conservation of force creates a tighter spin, right? This is the beginning of meditation. Okay? This is delusion. The spin is delusion, that contraction. And it keeps us from knowing, with a capital K, the all. Because the all is what frightens and keeps the tightening increasing. Okay? So our work is to open. Our work is to open our eyes, open our experience, open our ears, open everything, open our hearts and open our minds to what is actually happening. And in that opening, we slow down. And in the slowing down, we recognize, oh, spirit isn't out there. It was always here to begin with. It's just that I was refusing to see it. I was refusing to look anywhere near it. The light burned my eyes. Whatever metaphor you want to use. And this contraction keeps us hidden from our true nature. Our true nature sees itself through us, and whammo. Oh. Aha. Wow. And then we do it again. And then we do it again. And again. And what happens is we create a different context for everything in our lives. We see ourselves and others totally differently as we start to allow for this light to come in. You know, the shell cracks a little, the light comes in, and pretty soon, if we have the courage, it busts apart. And then we start to look at our experience and the experience of others as not only connected, but reflections of divinity. And there's so much freedom in that. There's nothing to fear. Death can't happen in that scenario. There can be a death of the body. But you have nothing, there's nothing to lose. There's absolutely nothing to lose from that place of awareness. And so if we relax into that and let that be our psychological and spiritual center of being, center of gravity, whatever you want to call it, if we just kind of rest there, there's nothing to move us because we are immovable. Doesn't mean we don't feel. We actually feel more. It doesn't mean that we don't think. We think differently. Doesn't mean that we can't act in the world. You feel committed to acting in the world because the world is you. And you are the world. Sounds like a song, doesn't it?
Just kind of curious the perspective of someone who has many years of meditation experience. Do the experiences, does meditation, does it change for you also? I mean, or is it pretty consistently the same experience? For me, it each time it's a little different. It feels a little different. It comes up to me, it's a little different.
Like snowflakes.
And for someone with many years of experience,
oh yeah. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. I just wondered if it developed a certain consistency.
Well, there's a steadiness that kind of creeps into the... I think, like, if you're asking me personally, like, how things have... I don't know if that's where your question was going, but...
Well, because you're the one with the years of
experience. I'm the one with the... Yeah, well, I've had a couple. I have noticed that I don't move even when it really hurts. Because the feeling of pain is just a deep contraction of resistance. And I have found that I can change the relationship with hurt. It becomes... It's not that it doesn't... That the intensity isn't there, but my relationship to it has shifted over years. Okay, I was the biggest wussy on the planet when I first entered Zendo, you know. And don't you dare tell me, teacher, that I should sit through it. You know, what a bunch of crap that is. I'm in pain here, you know. And so that was a big lesson, beautiful lesson for me when I was encouraged by the people sitting on either side of me to just experience it, okay? And wow, you know, I don't really have words for what that's like. I know that I'm surprised constantly at how varied a meditative experience is. Just like I'm surprised constantly at how my drive here to, you know, this meeting place is different every single time I drive it. Infinite variance. Okay? But the practice, though, is to rest in the thing that doesn't vary at all. Your awareness does not vary at all. Ego's ability to get in the way of awareness is constantly evolving. Finding new tricks. Exactly right. Exactly right. Finding new excuses. A real dumb question?
Beyond dumb.
Oh, really?
So, if enlightenment is always everywhere, or present, spirit, always everywhere, then what is its delusion?
Enlightenment could not exist without delusion.
But if enlightenment is everything at all times,
well, enlightenment isn't everything at all times. Awakening isn't everything at all times. Awakening and enlightenment are shifts in context. Like I said, they're shifts in our relationship, or shifts in the uncovering of our ability to uncover spirit. Spirit doesn't move. Spirit is not the same thing, though, as enlightenment. Enlightenment is in my view, at least, enlightenment is the aha, oh, yes, it's the, in other words, conscious, if you can look at consciousness as the awareness of awareness, that's our consciousness, right? Awareness itself, once awareness itself recognizes itself through the awakened spaciousness we call Tracy. Mm-hmm. And once it does that, there is enlightenment. But did spirit ever... No. Enlightenment is that activity. Back to the idea of the lamp. Okay? If you look at the lamp, it shines. Okay? The intensity of that shine is absolutely, absolutely dependent upon how dust-free the lampshade is, right? Our sitting, our meditation is the dusting of that lampshade, taking off that dust and allowing this radiance.
The radiance doesn't change.
No.
It doesn't change.
It does not change. It's always light.
Okay.
Okay? Now, I would not consider that a dumb question at all. Do not let ego play that one. The inquiry, the curiosity, that is, you know, that is the path. That is, that not knowing is the light. Knowing is the stuff on the lampshade. Because knowing is always with a small case K. Knowing with a small case K is always totally imbued with egoic attachment. I know the minute there is an I and a no, you know, subject, object, and predicate, those are just three giant mud wads that just hit the lampshade. Not knowing is not, it's not just the meditation sweeping it off, it's the breaking off of caked on mud so that that light becomes just radiant, blinding. Next week. Thank you for joining us. For more information about either the Infinite Smile Sangha or Michael McAllister, check out our website at www.infinitesmile.org.